your health with Dr. Burns. Hello and welcome everyone to our show. I have Melinda Curl with me. How are you doing today, Melinda?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, we were just chatting about how, trying to keep up with those under 10. They have so much energy, and I seem to find that I wish I had as much energy as they did. So at this point, but I know that you're on our show to talk about the book that you wrote and the experiences that you had with having seizures. So can you tell us a little bit about when they started, how was it diagnosed, just kind of like from the beginning?
Oh, sure. So my first seizure happened when I was 13 years old, and how it was diagnosed was I had a grand mal seizure, which is the bam, you go unconscious and into convulsions and scare everybody around you. And so I was outside with my brother and his friend Laurel playing, and we shot something with a slingshot up in the air, and I turned my neck and I cocked my head up at the sky, and then suddenly my head started twitching and I wasn't twitching it. And then boom, the next thing I knew, I was recovering in my living room on the couch, and my mom came and told me I had had a seizure. So that's when it started, and the first time we went to the neurologist, he said, well, let's wait and see if you have another one. There's an 80% chance that you won't ever have another one the rest of your life. So that was good news, except that a few weeks later, I did have another one, and then they put me on medication, and one medicine wasn't enough initially, so they raised the dose. I think the first medication was Depakote, and then they added Tegretol. It could have been the other way around, but Depakote and then Tegretol, and I stayed on that for quite some time. I stayed on that combination probably about 8 years, and it was fine, except it was really heavy doses of it, and it did keep me seizure free. That's where you want to be, is seizure free, but to get to being seizure free, they titrated the doses up, and that was terrible. I mean, it made me really slower. It impacted my academics. I went from an A student to like a BC student. But I was able to manage. And I did have grand mal seizures. So they were the big ones. And during my teenage years, when I was first diagnosed, they were really pretty bad. They lasted about 1 to 2 minutes. And I would be bruised. I would walk away with bruises all over, and I'd bite my tongue. So it was a very painful experience. I would sleep the rest of the day and have a headache. And it was just a very painful experience. So that's what a seizure is like.
Wow. I mean, it's like, basically before they were able to titrate the medications, like back then when you were a teenager, was anything setting them off? Because a lot of people, it could be like a smell, it could be a food. So did you ever figure out what was triggering them before you got on the medications?
I was put on a medication after my second seizure, and they really didn't figure it out. And my doctor, bless his heart, I actually loved my doctor at the time. He said to me, and I asked him, why is this happening? Is something setting him off? And he said to me, this is what's known as idiopathic, which means we're idiots and we don't know what's causing it. And so I think that really built some trust with me. And I really liked my neurologist from that point on. And I trusted him, and I trusted the medication, because I didn't have any idea. This was the 80s. This was the late 80s. So there wasn't the internet. It wasn't as easy to research or find other people who had illnesses that they weren't supposed to be able to beat. So at the time, I didn't think, oh, let's go all natural, because the seizure was a horrific experience, and I wanted to do anything to prevent them. And the medication, it did pretty much work. I mean, once they got the dose high, I was able to get my license at 16, which means I'd been seizure-free for 6 months. And I had a license all throughout my teenage years. So that was good.
Yeah. So and then what exactly made you get off the medications then?
You know, that's, I'm going to say vanity did. And here's what happens when you stay on a medication long enough, you start developing side effects. And for me, the side effect that I developed was like I'd get double vision occasionally. And yeah, it was annoying. But what really got to me was all my hair fell out. I also developed autoimmune diseases while I was on this medication. Yeah, well, I had eczema as a kid, and that would come and go. And then I also had asthma. That's an autoimmune disease. And allergies, I had that. But what really got to me was when I was 33, 34-ish, my hair fell out. And women are vain. And so I credit my big push towards natural healing based on vanity, because I really wanted my hair to come back. And I just felt like, you know, this medication that I'm taking every morning, it's not really promoting my health. It's just suppressing a symptom. Like, I knew that, and I felt like my body has the ability to heal itself and regrow my hair if I get it healthy enough, if I put the right nutrients in and I detox. I think I read a book by Kevin Trudeau called Natural Cures They Don't Want You to Know About or something like that. And that instilled the belief in me that my body could heal itself, but I still needed to take the action. And it was hard because I didn't know anyone else who had successfally had grand mal seizures and had treated them naturally. So it was kind of like, let's figure out what I can do to get as healthy as I can and then see if I can lower my medication. And my doctors, I will say my doctors were not in favor of lowering the dose at all. And, yeah, I kind of did it without their permission a little bit. But I'm happy I did because I have so much more energy. And, yeah, so I'm happy I did. So that was the big thing. It was what pushed me to come off medication was I lost my hair and I got too vain. And I had this belief. I had to be optimistic because otherwise I'd just get depressed.
Yes. Now, how long did it take you on your journey to find what you found now for you to be able to live seizure-free? Because I know that a lot of times people go to doctor after doctor after doctor, and it's like they fit a little bit of the puzzle, but then there's another part that's still missing, so then you go see someone else. So how long did it take you before you found what works for you?
I would have to say, probably 4 years.
Wow.
And that is because I started out just shooting in the dark, not even knowing what kind of things to Google. Or, you know, I started by trying out supplements. And I also started, when I was in California, that's even before I lost my hair, but I started trying out, you know, acupuncture and chiropractic. I'd gone to chiropractors and tried that because I knew it does provide relief. And I understood enough anatomy and physiology to understand, yeah, everything is connected through your spinal cord. And so I understood that. But it wasn't necessarily what was going to work for me. I tried a couple different diets. And sometimes I would give up a little bit on the diet. In the beginning, I would give up and I'd start going back to the medication. So I tried a diet that was kind of vegan, I guess. And I had some supplements going on. And I kind of gave up on that because when I did have a seizure, because at the time my mindset was, oh, if I have a seizure, then this didn't work. But I've changed my mindset since then, and I've started to view seizures as, this is a feedback for, do I need to alter my lifestyle to make it healthier? So when I finally did come off medication, it wasn't like, oh, I'm off drugs and everything's happy and great. I did have a couple seizures after I came off medication, but they were safer. I had a little bit of an aura, and they lasted 5 seconds as opposed to a minute. And I didn't hurt myself. And based on that, I feel like I'm finally on the right track. And I know if I do everything I can, get all the nutrition that my body needs and get all the exercise that my body needs, then I shouldn't have seizures. Because a healthy individual isn't having seizures. So I guess it's a holistic approach. I'm trying to do everything to support my health that I can.
Now, is there a family history of people in your family having seizures, or was it just a random thing with you?
Oh, no, I'm the only one. My sister is a diabetic, so she also has the autoimmune diseases. So that there is a family history of autoimmune diseases as well, but not epilepsy, no.
Okay. Now, what inspired you to write a book about your journey?
I wrote my book because I wished that somebody else had written a book for, you know, I wished that someone else with epilepsy had talked about it. There's a lot of people in America that have seizures that just don't talk about it. We don't have the support system like overweight people have Weight Watchers and they're talking about their journey and everybody's cheering them on. And when you have a support system like that, where you can see someone having success and other people cheering you on, it's very powerful. So I wrote the book in order to reach out to the epilepsy community and offer them hope. It's something I wish there were more books out there about people with epilepsy, so I could have felt, I wouldn't have felt so alone. I wrote my book, and there was a girl from my church who, she contacted me on Facebook, and she's like, oh my gosh, I never knew that you had that too. I've always felt so alone, and you don't always want to tell somebody, oh, I have a seizure disorder. It's not something you necessarily want to talk about. It's something you really want to forget about. But at the same time, it kind of, it does impact your lifestyle. And, you know, it's nice to have a support group. Now, not every support group is positive. Their support group that was in my area, I went a couple times and they just talked about the most depressing things about epilepsy. And I was just kind of like, well, that's great, but I don't want to fill my life with negative. I want to fill my life with positive, and I want to help other people fill their life with positive things, because when we're positive, then we think we can, and we start taking action to make ourselves healthier and, you know, take the steps to have a more full lifestyle.
Now, have you started your own support group? Have you started like a blog or something for that?
I do have a blog. It's just my firstandlastname.com, melindacurl.com. The people with epilepsy, they face other challenges aside from just the seizures. Like, employment is a huge challenge for people with epilepsy because often transportation, they're not allowed to drive, and having seizures on the job, anything driving is not open to them. And then anything with, I don't know, big mechanical equipment, they're not going to be allowed to do. And so people with epilepsy, they do face a lot of employment challenges. And so I did start a blog, and it addresses those issues. It's called, I think the title of my blog is Eliminating Epilepsy and Elevating Lives, because I want to show people with epilepsy that, yes, you can lead a healthy seizure-free life, and you can become financially independent, which is something that I'm still working on. But I've started my own home-based business, and I want to encourage other people with epilepsy to do the same thing. I want to set the example, I guess, because I think it's possible.
Okay. Yeah. Now, when it does come, you know, there's several different types of forms of epilepsy. So for all the listeners out there, you know, it's like if you are on your medications, you need to talk with your doctor if there's something about you wanting to reduce the dose. So I just want to let everybody know out there, because everyone's different as far as their situation goes. So with that one, but what are some things that you feel that you can do now that you couldn't do when you were on the medications?
I have much clearer thought processes. I can keep a conversation and remember it instead of, I guess, forgetting it. I think my memory was really poor. And that was why I struggled to keep jobs when I would be able to get them. So right now, keeping up with conversations is so much easier for me without the medication.
So, and then what about with your, you know, you're talking about like with your nephews that they're all under 10. So are you able to keep up with them?
Oh my gosh, I have so much more energy than I ever imagined, and I almost don't know what to do with myself sometimes, which sounds weird because, like, I used to sleep, like, 9-10 hours a night, and now I'm like, okay, I'm done in 6 hours, and part of that's I'm getting more oxygen flowing through my blood. I'm doing a diaphragmatic breathing, and so I'm getting more oxygen to my brain, and I have more energy, and it's exciting.
So now what would be like a typical, you know, like when you were on the medications and when you decided to go with a more healthy lifestyle, what was your diet like back then? And then what's a typical diet for you now?
One thing I did was I cut out processed foods. So I kind of follow the paleo diet. When I was a teenager, though, I was under the impression, because I was a skinny kid, I was under the pressure, oh, I can eat anything. And I did. And I enjoyed anything. Processed, unprocessed, I just enjoyed whatever food was out there. But I think that kind of led to my downfall. And I think I was, I don't know, in denial or something, because I still suffered from allergies and asthma. I didn't see the correlation. I knew that a lot of people associated healthy, overweight and unhealthy, but I didn't know, oh yeah, your allergies, your asthma, that can be related to what you put in your body. You know, as a teenager, you think you're invincible, but you know, you learn as you grow older. So now it's a lot less processed, a lot more whole foods. I try to focus in on whole foods. But I just keep it simple. I did try the ketogenic diet and the modified Atkins for seizures, but I added more carbohydrates in because I found that they weren't triggering the seizures at all.
Okay. Because I noticed, like, for some people who have seizures, like, the smell of perfume, it could be like the way lights are blinking, even food allergies to like wheat or eggs or dairy can like even trigger the seizures as well. And so, I mean, it's like even like not getting enough sleep. So for you nowadays, with this healthier lifestyle that you have, do you feel that you can actually deal with stress a little bit better than when you did before when you were on the medications? Was that another thing that you had to learn how to do?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can deal with stress a lot better. And I find that I'm completing tasks instead of starting something and then getting distracted and going off to something else. But you did talk about the triggers. I do think that, I mean, I think that this diet and this lifestyle will help reduce seizures in other people, even if they have those types of triggers. I know what you're talking about. You have to have the underlying factors of like excess electrons in your brain already overactive and to have a seizure. So I do know that there are people who have those triggers, but I think that even if they did this healthier lifestyle and this diaphragmatic breathing, I think it would help them reduce their seizures regardless. And even if they're on medication, I think breathing correctly and getting the right nutrients absolutely will help.
Oh, yeah, and I know that it's like we're in a world where we're all, I mean, basically in a flight or fight response every day with traffic, getting to work. I mean, it's like we don't seem to take time to be able to rest and be able to walk outside like we used to and all that stuff. And so I know that for some people who even have that underlying issue that building on top of that with the other things that we have with technology and everything else, that it could actually multiply what's going on with the underlying inflammation in the body for that for the more active electricity to be, going on for
Yeah,
them.
I think inflammation. I think there's some underlying inflammation. I don't know, maybe even in my brain. I know it is going on with regarding the hair loss, which I still haven't regrown my hair, but I'm trying and I'm connecting with other people who have alopecia universalis. But yeah, I think there's a lot of underlying inflammation that we need to calm down. And with the right nutrition and exercise, I have faith my body can heal itself.
Do you feel like that sometimes that you have days where you relapse, like where you don't have so much energy, or you think that you might be having like a mini seizure? Have you had any of those days, types of days?
I mean, when I looked at the surrounding things, like, okay, well, what was going on? Was I slipping up in my diet? Yes. Was I, so I did, but the seizure that I, so some of the seizures, I guess, where it was relapse, I guess, they were a lot safer. I started feeling them come on and I lay on the floor. And my mother said I didn't seize, I just blacked out for a few seconds. And so that's a big deal. Like, if you're not convulsing, if you just, and you're able to get to someplace safe, then it's a lot safer. And after they happen, I readjust. I look at, okay, well, this is what was going on that day. Let's make sure I get my exercise in. I do, I get the healthy nutrition in, and I mean, so there are days when I fall off the bandwagon and I'll have something processed, and some days I can handle it, but it's best to do an 80-20 rule. 80% of the time you're a stickler for it, and if because you can give yourself stress if you're so stressed out about, oh my gosh, am I putting the right thing into me? But yeah, so yeah, there are days when I've relapsed. But now I have a different viewpoint. I look at it as feedback. on, you know, am I still following the healthy lifestyle? You know,
okay.
So.
I know a lot of people can look at their illness as, you know, something negative, something debilitating. So how would you get people to kind of look at it as something positive for them?
You know, that is, it's something I struggled with for the, and I had seizures, you know, 24 years of my life I spent with seizures. So I looked at it as debilitating for about a decade. I ignored it for about the first decade, and then I looked at it as something debilitating the next decade. I think the best thing to do is kind of to brainwash yourself. Maybe brainwash is a negative term, but we self-talk a lot, and you can program your mind for success. There are some CDs called Think Right Now, mind programming. If you don't think you can overcome your illness, go to Amazon and find some mind programming CDs for your health. And it's not going to be like, oh, man, I listened to this and I reprogrammed my self-talk. So now I'm saying, yes, my body has an amazing ability to heal itself, and instead of, oh, I need to rely on this medication. So it's you reprogram your mind so that you actually believe it, so that you take the steps forward, so that you actually you go and research and you find other people and you start taking the steps of eating healthy, eating the kale and the broccoli that you didn't like before. So part of it starts with a belief in yourself. And in order to do that, you just have to really reprogram how you think, I guess.
Yep, it makes sense. All right, we'll talk more when we get back from the break. Hello and welcome to Here's to Your Health with Dr. Burns. I am Dr. Burns and I have with me from Kitty Corner, I have Elsa. And Elsa wants to talk a little bit about exercise. So Elsa, is exercise supposed to be fun?
Yeah.
Okay, what type of exercise do you do?
I just do ballet, but somehow I don't. But somehow I'm alone like 2 days because Kelly isn't at my room.
Okay, so do you like to dance?
Yeah.
Is dance a good exercise?
Yeah, but I usually dance with the 12 dancing princesses.
Okay, so yes, you can dance to music or to videos. They got videos out so that you can dance to. What other types of exercise are there for kids that are fun? How about is bike riding fun? No, come here. Recording right now. Is bike riding fun?
Yeah.
So running. What about, yeah, running's fun too. What about swimming?
Yeah.
Okay, and what about jumping? Is that fun too? Yeah. Yes? So are those all the things that we can do to stay healthy and to exercise?
Yes.
Okay, are we supposed to exercise every day?
Yes.
Yes, all right. Well, thank you very much, Elsa, for joining us on our show. This is Dr. Burns, and welcome to Here's to Your Health. We have a special guest today. Her name's Elsa, and from Kitty Corner. So, Elsa, what are some things that you've learned about in between eating good food and bad food? What should you be eating?
Bananas. Oranges.
Okay, what else?
Peaches.
Okay. So, now, are we supposed to be eating good food or bad food?
Good food.
What happens if you eat bad food?
Then we get sick and want to heal a little bit.
Okay. So then if we want to have energy, if kids want to have energy and be able to play, then what are we supposed to do?
Good food.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So, and that is from Kitty Corner with Elsa.
Please join us every Saturday.
All right. Hello, everyone. And we're back from break. And I was talking with Melinda, and it looks like that for anybody to deal with like an inflammatory process or with anything in life, it's like you have to be comfortable with your flaws. You have to be comfortable with your mistakes and being able to live within the boundaries, either health-wise or otherwise, and to be okay with that. Would you say that that's right, Melinda?
Oh my gosh, yes. I think it is right. And I think that's one reason I wrote my book, was because I was okay with my epilepsy, but at the same time, I really kind of hid that from people. I didn't want them to know about that. I wanted everyone to think I was kind of perfect, and that's not really who I was. I needed to get comfortable with, okay, this is where I am, and to address it, to fix it, you know, to move forward. So, yeah.
Yeah, because I know it's like in society, I don't know where it came from, but there's this, you know, like sense of, oh, you know, like I have to show everyone from the outside that I am all put together and that everything in my life is fine. When, you know, in reality, we're all, you know, I mean, it's like we all make mistakes. We're all, you know, I mean, it's like not perfect. We're not flawless. And for some reason, I think we all forgot somewhere down the line that, you know, I mean, hey, you know, like we're people and things happen and that it's all okay and things will work out. And I mean, it's like with the people with your blog and stuff, are a lot of them still not okay with actually saying that they have epilepsy and that they can only do so much in a day, or, you know, because sometimes a trigger might happen even though it's unexpected for them?
Well, I'm not getting a lot of interaction on my blog, but in the epilepsy groups I'm part of online, a lot of them, when they have seizures, some of them are okay sharing it, and some of them, because they'll get support from the group, some of them aren't okay sharing it. Everybody's at a different point. And some of them, I can tell, they're striving to be healthier so that they can come off medication. But then some of them are also, I'm too reliant on the medication, so I think it's great that you were able to come off, but I'm too reliant. And it's a mindset. It's where you are. I can understand that mindset. I was there a decade ago. So I see all a huge variety, and I just try to put out a positive message to them so that they can be inspired someday, because it's not going to happen overnight.
Yep, that's true. Nothing really happens overnight for anybody. And I just thought, I mean, it was kind of funny that, like, my daughter, you know, was saying some stuff, and she was thinking it's all going to happen overnight, and trying to explain to her that no, stuff really doesn't happen overnight. I mean, it's like she's 5, and trying to get that concept in a little kid, it's kind of funny, you know, trying to see her head, try and grasp it. You know, no, it's not going to happen tomorrow. You know, it's going to take a while before, you know, we get whatever it is that she wants, that she's got to work for it, and it's going to take a few days. It's not something that you get right away.
Well, so. And I knew that mindset, and I kind of felt like, oh, gosh, it might be too soon for me to write a book, because I've only been seizure-free and medication-free for a couple months, and people are going to criticize me, and they're going to be like, well, have you had any seizures? But then I, you know, I thought about it. I could wait 5 years and somebody could criticize me. Oh, you know, you haven't had a seizure, but you had one 5 years ago. And so I just had to put it out there, because, and I just had to share myself so people, you know, they can take it for what it's worth. I mean, I did come off medication, and yeah, I did have a couple seizures after I came off medication, but it's a journey, and I'm sharing my journey with other people, and they can learn something. Maybe they'll go home and they'll read the book and they'll be like, oh my gosh, I think I'll try this diaphragmatic breathing and find that, you know, oh, it does benefit them. And so what if they don't come off medication? If they have more energy in their life because they're getting more oxygen to their brain, I mean, I'm happy that I was able to point that out to them. So I don't know. Yeah.
That's good. And then also, too, I mean, I think that with your book getting out there, it, like you said, you had someone at church who was just like, oh, my gosh, I think I was like the only one. So I think with getting your book out, it's going to let people know that they don't have to go through this alone, that there are actually other people out there who are going through, you know, like near the same thing that they're having, and will be able to reach out and find other people who, you know, like understand what they're going through, or, you know, or something like for their spouse or their families to be able to know that there are other people out there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So now with this, I mean, it's like, since you said it's like with your family, how much of a support has your family been for you, you know, like with your health issues and with what you were going through? Did they think that they were alone, or did they also find like other people who had children that were going through the same thing that you were going through?
So my family was really supportive, but they were also really scared. And I mean, when I was 13, I went to the neurologist and I had to take the medicine, and they, you know, were very good at reminding me always to take the medication, almost to the point where I kind of believed that I needed it for the rest of my life and my body couldn't function without it. So in that sense, I think they were trying to be as supportive as they could, and they were just doing, you know, they were doing all that they knew how to do to help the situation. My dad did, that was during my teenage years is when he took me to a support group in the area. And I think I was a little turned off because the person leading the group had hundreds of seizures a day, and she kind of was depressing. Like, my seizures were pretty much under control. I just had to deal with the drowsy side effects, and I wanted to pretend like I didn't have seizures. So at that time, I went to that support group, and it wasn't a good fit for me. I needed something more positive, and I didn't remember any of my seizures, so it was kind of hard for me to talk about them. You know, you're unconscious, and people ask, well, what's it like? Well, you're kind of unconscious and don't remember much. Now I start to recognize what an aura feels like before and after. But at that time, when I was living with my parents and they were involved, they weren't so supportive. And then after 24 years of being on medication, I broke the news to them. I said, look, I've seen double. I've been on 4 different medications, and I don't really see an end to the medications. And sometimes the side effects were scarier than the seizures. So they got on board with me, and they said, okay, we'll support you in coming off the medication. So that was nice when I finally had their support and approval in coming off it and choosing a healthier lifestyle and reducing my need for prescription medication.
Well, that's good. So would you say that everyone needs a support group in order for them to move forward with a healthy lifestyle?
It is so helpful. I wouldn't say everyone needs one. I would say everyone would probably benefit from one, and you will definitely see more success if you connect with other people and they encourage you. I found that in business, and I surround myself with successful people, so I start to develop their habits. So it is, you can do it without a support group, but I would highly recommend connecting with people in your area. Meetup.com has lots of different cool groups where you can go and meet up with healthy people. in your area. There's lots of groups on Facebook that have, that are, I don't know, towards any health condition you can imagine. So there's lots of ways to find support in the area. And that's one thing that I do that I always encourage people to do. Surround yourself with successful people who have the habits that you want to have or who are at the place in life that you want to be. If there's someone you know and, you know, they're an attorney and you want to be an attorney, start hanging out with them and learning from them. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So now, for anyone who like has a seizure in public, would you say that for other people, just to kind of, you know, like lay them down, move everything away from the person, and then just kind of, you know, let you know, just kind of like be by their side until the seizure is over?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. You can hurt somebody if you try to move them. Most likely, if they're having a grand mal or tonic-clonic seizure, which is the kind that I had, where you just go unconscious, they're going to drop to the ground. But just make sure there's no sharp edges around, things that they could hurt themselves on, and just wait it out. Most seizures aren't going to be status epilepticus, which means they're lasting more than 5 minutes and they're life-threatening. Most seizures are a couple minutes. At least mine averaged 1 to 2 minutes when I was taking my medication. But I do know there are some people who have staring spell seizures, and I am not well-versed in those. I don't know much about petit mal seizures because I didn't have them.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it's just so for any of the listeners out there, if they do see someone having a seizure out like at a restaurant or somewhere else, it's just basically making sure that they're safe, that they're not around anything, and that they can't, you know, like harm themselves in any way, like falling or something like that and hitting their head. In the old days, they would say to, you know, try and put something in the mouth so that way they wouldn't swallow their tongue. And, you know, you don't do that these days. It's just basically making sure that they're comfortable, that there's not a crowd around them, and that they're are able to, you know, maintain a little bit of safety without, you know, getting hurt or something like that. If someone is having one.
Right. And you can call an ambulance. I will say it's very expensive for the person having a seizure, especially if you call an ambulance, because we end up paying for it. And I paid for more ambulance rides. And we, you know, even if they get to you and they, you can ask not to take the ambulance ride to the ER, but they're going to do it anyway if they come to you and you're not fully conscious yet. And those ambulance rides are pretty expensive. They're like $500. And that's with good insurance. So you can call an ambulance. And I think for most people, that's what they're going to do, because most people, they've never seen them before. They're scared and they want to be helpful. If you know the person has a history of seizures, you may want to wait a minute or two and see if the seizure ends quickly and if they regain consciousness, and then ask them if they want you to call the ambulance, because most of the time the seizures aren't life-threatening, and most of the time it's just an added expense if you do.
So, yes, but, I mean, for anyone who has good intentions, if they feel that it's going on too long, definitely, you know, I mean, call for the ambulance or something like that. Because, I mean, it's like some people just don't know. So, yeah, and, I mean, it's...
And that's... I totally understand that. I mean, I'm telling you this, but at the same time, I know... Well, because it's cost me a lot of money, you know, because other people were scared. It cost me a lot of money because I've had seizures around other people who were scared and they just said, oh no, sorry, you're gonna have to pay for it. But yes, I do want people to understand that most seizures aren't life-threatening, and most people who do have seizures are gonna be okay with that. I mean, it was annoying getting an ambulance ride, But at the same time, I did feel loved. I felt like the people cared enough to take action, stop what they were doing. And so I know I'm giving kind of a dual message, but I want people to understand this is something that we have to deal with. Like, we already have problems keeping employment, and now we're adding costs like ambulance rides that are unexpected. So, I don't know. It's something I've lived with, and I had to pay for, and I grudgingly did, but...
Well, I realize that it's an oxymoron, but, you know, for people who don't have, don't have seizures or, you know, with stuff like that, I mean, it's like for them, it's a little nerve-wracking, and, you know, all people want to do is just basically help out, and they feel that, you know, calling the ambulance is a good thing to do, and it's for them a way for them to be able to help out.
Oh, yeah. Please understand, I would only encourage people, if you know the person already has a seizure, a history of seizures, then you're good friends with them, then you could wait it out. But most people are going to call an ambulance, and I understand, and that's fine. I guess what I'm just trying to get across is the majority of seizures aren't life-threatening. While they may look like they are, and I've seen a seizure before. My sister had a seizure. She's a diabetic, and I saw her have an insulin reaction seizure, and it scared the heck out of me. So I understand that they are scary. So.
Yeah. I mean, especially for diabetics. I mean, if their blood sugars end up going low, yeah, it could trigger a seizure. And and then not only are you dealing with the seizure, but then you're also having to deal with the blood sugar part of it as well. So that's why for like a lot of diabetics, they've got to check their blood sugars, you know, 2 or 3 times a day to make sure that they're staying within their normal range. Because if it dips too low, that could possibly happen for them. Okay. So. Yeah, definitely. And so it's like, it's not one of those things where you can like increase your insulin so you can eat the cherry pie, you know? I mean, because something bad can happen there. It's got to be to where, you know, like they've got to make sure that they're within their normal range, that their doctors told them that they need to be. So then that way they're not dipping too low because other medical conditions can come up from having really low blood sugars as well.
Right. But they do that. My sister's done that. Increase the insulin so you can have the cherry pie. They do that. It's not a healthy thing to do, though.
Yes, that is true. It's not. So, or even for, like, anybody, it's like have something healthy first before you decide to have the cherry pie, before your insulin's inside a spike on that one. So that's too funny. So, well, I want to thank you, Melinda, for coming on our show and for talking to us about, that there is a possibility for a lot of people to be able to, you know, be able to control, you know, like their seizures through natural ways. And so thank you for coming on. And is there any last things you'd like to say?
Health is a journey. Take it one step at a time. Try to do something every day to improve your health. And be positive.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And we'll see everybody later.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.